Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is getting close to the regular season here. We are recording on what is February the 26th, the month of February, flying by as it usually does. I am Vlad Sedler, one of your hosts, and I'm here with my co-host, Jason Anthony. What's cracking?
What up, Vlad? Long time no talk. And I know we're both battling a cold, so excuse our deep, sultry voices today to all of our podcast listeners. But excited to talk some starting pitching today. It's crazy how close we are to the regular season. It kind of snuck up on me as far as like, oh, I need to pick when I need to draft my main event. Oh, I don't really have many days to draft my main event, my schedule. So I'm actually doing an extra one when I go to Vegas now. Instead of two online, I'm going to do one online and two live. So excited for Vegas. Excited. We're talking dinner plans. We're talking get together. We're talking drafting. And now we're talking starting pitching. So let's get it rolling.
Let's get it rolling. Yeah, it's all happening. It's coming hot and heavy. We are about a week away from the World Baseball Classic. 2 weeks away from main events, as you mentioned. Those are starting to get going. A few weeks away, of course, from Vegas. It's going to be incredible. And an opening day, about a month away here. And there's a lot of fragility, futility, whatever you may call it. Like every time we're checking the news or we're getting a notification, the home runs are great and everything, but it's mostly it's negative. It's players getting hurt. It's us bracing ourselves for players that we have been drafting and have been rostering who are now going through what a lot of players usually go through in spring, which is little bangs and bruises and sometimes even worse.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. Spring training, you're not really hoping for good news. You're trying to avoid bad news. There's only so much good news we can get, whether it's a velocity uptick, bat speed increase, new pitch from a pitcher. But, you know, I don't want to sound crazy, but it actually seems pretty light so far as the bad news. So I'm going to knock on wood extremely hard right now to see that. But it's just kind of navigate the injuries and the news and how do we take advantage of it all.
Yeah, on the pitching side, the Brandon Woodruff news for starters, they're just kind of slow ramping him. He's somebody who's had his ADP climb getting close to 100, 110 overall. And with good news and good health, we know what a great pitcher he's been for the last half decade. We would see him soar through the first six rounds. And then so he is not hurt per se, but they definitely want to take it slow, take it easy with him. And so he's a little behind in camp. Blake Snell with a similar situation there. Merrill Kelly was, I think, all but ruled out for opening day. And now all of a sudden, it seems like Merrill Kelly still has a chance for the last I read. Shane Bieber is not going to be ready. Of course, the Toronto Blue Jays added Max Scherzer. He's not going to be jumping in the rotation right away. And then some lesser guys, you know, Stephen Kolek is hurt for the Royals, David Festa, but a lot of pitchers. The news rarely gets better, right? It's almost like downhill from here.
We're just hanging on for dear life. The Max Scherzer signing seems very ominous for Shane Bieber. And I was really high on Shane Bieber coming into the offseason. He was a big target when draft season started, but I am completely off now until we get any positive news. So, you know, now it's just like the guys were on, let's not get hurt. The guys were off, let's not get hurt because we don't need them falling any further. We want those guys we're not on to get drafted. So, but yeah, for every injury, there's an opportunity, right?
Indeed. And Shane Bieber, I mean, there's a little bit of good news. It was last week he was progressing and throwing from 120 feet, but we know he's going to be out for the early part of the season. We know he's going to be falling as a target. And there are going to be a lot more of those. On the hitter side, listen, injuries beget injuries. And we cannot be surprised when we see something like Royce Lewis dealing with right side tightness. They say that it's precautionary, the Twins do. But nevertheless, all that hope and excitement that some of us may have had for Royce Lewis is falling back down to reality. And and a bunch more hitters in a similar boat.
Breaking, shocking news, Royce Lewis hurt. Wow, who saw that coming? You know, again, they might create a buying opportunity, but, you know, there doesn't seem any major injuries from the hitters, but a lot of little concerning stuff. Britton Doyle, I know, is a big bounce back target, getting imaging on his wrist. Josh Young came out firing with a bunch of hard hit balls. He's got hamstring tightness. Jacob Melton hit a bomb his first game. He's got a sore thumb. Brandon Marsh, him with the platooning and the Phillies, got a jammed hand. Aiden Miller, another Philly, but this time a prospect, back with no timetable. That is basically, we're probably not going to see him this year. And then 24-year-old Chase DeLauder on the Cleveland Guardians, lower body soreness out of too much activity. Again, 24-year-old lower body soreness from too much activity. Vlad, we were 24 once, right? Did you ever have lower body soreness?
Yes, but probably not from sports. yeah, Chase DeLauder, that's a sad one, because, I mean, this is a guy that just has been unable to stay healthy in the minor leagues. And this is his first big shot with not a lot of competition there for him in the outfield. Of course, this is just out of, as they say, abundance of caution. So hopefully it's no big deal. The Aiden Miller one, that's a bit of a bummer, because he is a top prospect for the Phillies. Lots of speed, a little bit of power. He's somebody that we were targeting in draft champions. That would have been interesting. And so, it is what it is at this point. And hopefully Connor Griffin's foot's okay after getting the ball off of it and getting removed precautionarily.
You don't have any shares of Connor Griffin, do you?
I don't know. Maybe.
How worried are you on a scale of 1 to 10 about Josh Hader and his playing catch and biceps injury?
Yeah, I'm worried because I don't have any Abreu, and I do have a couple of Josh Haders. And it's funny, I even did it after, I remember recording a podcast with Mike Mager, and I was messaging him, hey, I'm in a DC, you know, we were just talking about how he was worried about him and how he just wasn't drafting him for now. He said the same thing about Pablo Lopez, and obviously we know how that turned out. I listened to him on Pablo. I hadn't on Hader. This is back in January. I thought he was going to be fine, so I was taking him around, you know, fifth round, I believe. Now he's fallen. I think VDP have him around somewhere like 100, 110. And it doesn't seem like he'll be ready for opening day, but he's working through it. Of course, you just never know what can happen along the way, if there are any setbacks and whatnot. Brian Abreu is slated to start the season as the closer, but Josh Hader will be fine. But again, this is all hearsay. I'm, you know, no baseball doctor, not a podcast doctor, none of the above.
I'm scared. Scared out of my mind to draft him right now. It feels like a best case scenario, we're going to see him out for the first 2 months. But feels like there's an injury that's been waiting to heal that's not healing based on the progression. But again, neither Vlad or I are doctors or care to be doctors, but we do our best to project injuries and how long they're out. But it's going to be interesting what this does for Brian Abreu as in Hader progresses or doesn't progress throughout spring training, moving into draft season, main event draft season.
Yes, indeed. Our episode today, we're going to talk through starting pitchers. It's kind of why our news sections is a little short. So there are a lot of pitchers to dive into. We're going to try to get through the guys that go in the top 200 ADP. It's about 50, 55 guys. And we'll try to touch on them, break them down into tiers, talk a little strategy. But really quick, for those that aren't on board, I know you've been listening to the podcast. Hopefully you've been enjoying it. Jump in for the season. We're going to take really good care of you. There's a reason why our people crush everything. They, you know, win in NFBC leagues, and they go and they destroy their Yahoos, their CBSs, their home leagues, is because we really give a definitive advantage, not just the players that we have, high-stakes players on our roster and the team here at FTN, but also the type of content that we're giving with everything from our rankings, cheat sheets. Now we have got about 12 plus on the cheat sheet side, the grid sheets as well. We've got it for every format, the projected custom rankings and projections that you can set up for your league. You got a a weird, KBB category, or, you know, hits allowed or whatever. We've got it all. You set it up. You can print out the rankings based on whatever your league settings are. Just really, really good content. If you want to go an extra step and get the high stakes package, that one includes a one-on-one call with me. You can do that anytime in the preseason or during the regular season. We'll work on your specific questions, your drafts and whatnot. But GUT26 is a good code you can use. Gets 10% off. You can do the draft package, the regular package that gets you everything for the preseason and the in-season, or the high stakes. So check us out, ftnfantasy.com. And we've got some cool best ball stuff coming on, partnering with somebody who has been crushing it in the best ball space over the last few years in baseball and football. He's going to do some premier exclusive stuff for us here, FTN Fantasy. All right.
Hey, Vlad, FTN just keeps getting better, man, every year. Great group and great tools. I mean, you guys just keep rolling it out. And if you want to win money, subscribe, guys.
Let's get it. Let's get them money, get them league titles, some trophy smack trophies as well. Pitchers, starting pitchers, a quick look at 2025, the season that was. It was a rare one in the case that essentially top three starting pitchers, depending on when you drafted in the year, ended up the top three starting pitchers. Not necessarily in specific order, but Paul Skenes, Tarik Skubal first, of course, and Garrett Crochet were your top three. Zach Wheeler, of course, got hurt early. He would have been on track there as well. There was a time period when Wheeler was going third in drafts, but by main event season, I think Garrett Crochet jumped up ahead of him. So those guys were really, really solid at the top, which is something we're not used to. No major injuries in the first round of with the pitchers. Beyond that, I mean, it really was a mixed bag, like it always is. Like, you know, Corbin Burnes was out for the year early. Cole Reagans missed most of the year. Dylan Cease was an absolute disaster, which is something we may have saved you with if you were an FTN subscriber last year. Blake Snell, of course, as well, hurt. Spencer Strider, Michael King, those were some of the other busts there. But the guys that rose, these are the guys that are now going really early in drafts. Like, they've just leapfrogged, and it's the Brian Wu, the Christopher Sanchez, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Hunter Brown. These are now guys that are among the top 10 starting pitchers in the league. This is based on like one season of success, and granted they had success the year prior and things like that. But just from a perspective of last year, how much credence, like how much are you sort of doubting some of these guys? Like, even though we know they're good pitchers, like, really, are you trusting some of these second, tier two pitchers?
You know, it's interesting looking back from last year, and, you know, it shows why we put so much capital into the top level starting pitching, because most of that list on the first side is every one of them did well other than injury, other than probably Dylan Cease, but everyone performed based off the skills. You start looking for the next tier of pitchers from last year that we drafted, you know, ADP 70 to 103. All of a sudden, we start to have skills implosion. Tanner Bibee, Bryce Miller, Bailey Ober, Aaron Nola. It shows that we are still not very good as a community at identifying pitchers and how hard this game is that we play. Moving into this year and looking back at that, how much credence do we put into success from last year? You have guys that have a track record. You have guys that is a 1 year. Someone like Yamamoto, I am not on this year, mainly because of the workload from last year. Not only was it the regular season, but it was the playoffs, and now it's the WBC. So as much as I think he's a top five pitcher, I don't want to add that extra risk. And then one other name on here who I was all in on last year was Logan Gilbert. His K rate was 30%. He had a flexor. What did he have? A strained elbow flexor tendon. His second half, when he came back from that injury, his skills declined. Do we think that tendon is magically all better? Or do you think it's going to hold up all season? As much as I want Logan Gilbert, I don't think I'll have any of him just due to things like that. So I'm not looking as much as skill, but injury, guys that have done it, and I think they will continue to do it. The Jacob deGroms, the Freddie Peraltas, I do like. you have some pop-ups in the Hunter Brown, Hunter Green, extreme skills. Can they do it again? Not sure.
Yeah, you know, and Tarik Skubal, who is the undisputed starting pitcher one, I mean, he's somebody that in NFBC drafts, you'll see him go first overall in some drafts, most likely 3, 4, 5, depending. I think most of the time Ohtani and Judge will go ahead of him, but a lot of people may want to start their drafts with him. And I mean, he's been absolutely dominant, like just since that July 4th when he returned from which he was flexor tendon surgery himself, and but he was out quite a while. When he did return in 2023, he was, I mean, he since that time, whatever it is now, a year and a half, 2.5 years, I mean, nobody's really close into what he's doing. Like you're looking at a 5x5 fantasy output. He's got more strikeouts than anyone, 571 over that period. Closest is Cease at 538, big difference. ERA of 239, closest to him is Zach Wheeler among qualified, 274. His whip over that period, 2.5 years, 0.9, like just absolutely, you know, minuscule there. And wins too, leads in wins as well, 38 wins. Carlos Rodon has 37 wins over that same time span. But where are you willing to draft Tarik Skubal in the main event?
That's 38 wins on a Detroit Tiger team that has not been great either. That's the impressive part. And they're much improved as well. You know, I start to look at pitcher. I think I have a really hard time taking him over. I won't take him over Ohtani, won't take him over Judge, or for Judge, won't take him over Soto, won't take him over Witt. You start talking Acuna, you start talking Jose Ramirez, that's when Skubal comes into the equation. He will go number one in a draft, in a main event. We know that. That's just how this works. I have a hard time building a team like that, and pitchers have inherent risk. He's been a picture of health since he came back, but his velocity has also gone up from 95.8 to 96.8 to 97.6. Is there a breaking point there? I don't know. As we have come to find out as a fantasy community, elbows are not meant to throw the baseball that fast for that many times. So there is another blow up coming. I hope not anytime soon, because he is the most fun pitcher to watch for me. But based off of where I have him, I probably won't have any.
The Paul Skeens versus Garrett Crochet setup is very interesting. It's a lot of times it's almost personal preference, like maybe where you live in the world and or in the U.S. for most, Canada, most people playing, you know, who you prefer personally, if you even want a pitcher around there. But it's probably a good way to start with either of those guys. I mean, you know, what the season Crochet had last year was incredible, and especially with so many people doubting whether he would be able to stay healthy. We know how valuable and scarce the ratio categories are, right? Like that we want to anchor down low ERAs and whips as much as we can, because during the course of the season, we're going to be running into a lot of problems where there are going to be risks we're going to want to take. We're going to want to chase strikeouts to get two start pitchers who look good on paper and then don't get the second start or end up getting blasted. We want to be able to cover that with strong anchors. Skeens and Crochet do that. They do that in spades. I mean, Skeens has a sub 2 ERA over the course of his 2-year career. It's incredible. Both these guys are great. Crochet seems to get the strikeout advantage. He did it at least last year, and a couple ticks higher than his. Of course, if Skeens had more strikeouts this year in similar amount of innings, I don't think I would be all that surprised. Is it not just as simple as really coming down to a category that we can't even really project anyways, and that's wins? And is it possible at all that the fact that Pittsburgh is kind of surging and they've added some players, like we've seen Jacob DeGrom had bad win luck on good Mets team offenses, right? Like Pittsburgh can have a good, like, just, you don't know how these things are going to work out. Like how do you line these two up? How do you convince yourself of a Skeens over a Crochet or vice versa?
You just said a surging Pirates. That's an oxymoron if I've ever heard one, Vlad. They are improving, and it's nice to see them trying. You know, I actually just started an online championship from a slow draft from pick 12, and I started off Paul Skeens, Garrett Crochet. Was that any fun?
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, I think it does boil down to wins for me. And when we started draft season, my buddy August took Crochet over Skeens at like the pick 9 in a DC. And I talked to him. I said, what are you thinking? And he goes, look at the win. 10 to 18 is a huge difference. And it's a big delta. And they are not predictable. But one number jumps off the page for me between Crochet and Skeens is average number of innings pitched per start. Garrett Crochet was 6.4. Paul Skeens was 5.85. We all know going deeper into games gives you a better chance for a win. So wins are not predictable, but better team A, going deeper into games B, and, you know, proven wins kind of show that. I mean, that being said, Skeens did have 11 wins and 23 starts in his rookie season, so it's not going to surprise me if he gets 14, 15 wins. But I think with how deep Crochet goes into games, you could see an 18 to 20 win season on the horizon.
So those three are basically your tier 1A. That's at least how I have them, because the next group, it's more of a 1B. I mean, 1B, there's a big drop-off, right? So after those three, in the ADP, it's at least a round of a difference. But these guys going, I would say, at the end, at the 2-3 turn in 12 teamers, or in the middle of the second round of 15 teamers, there's a combo there. It's Yamamoto and it's Christopher Sanchez. And then there's a little set group there now after that has been going like before pick 40. If you want to add them into the mix, it's Brian Wu, Logan Gilbert, the two Mariners, and then Chris Sale. Well, let's talk about this group. Are you shopping here at all?
You know, looking at the fantasy baseball starting pitcher kind of landscape, it seems like it's just a huge tier breaks from the top three to this group, and then to the second group, with the Hunter Brown, Hunter Green group. I am definitely shopping in this group because I do believe this is the last true aces. But how many years have we seen where there's, what, maybe eight aces that you're looking at? Now you're looking at twos trying to be aces. So I'm shopping at it. Looking at it's easy to identify Christopher Sanchez as my number four based off the ground ball rate and the strikeout rate. Anybody with near a 60% ground ball rate, at 58.3 matched with an over 20% strikeout rate and doesn't walk guys, he's going to limit runs significantly. Again, the velocity tick up every year after year scares me, but we can't predict injuries, so I'm not going to say I'm off of him because of that. He just keeps getting better. And again, he goes deep in the game. So Sanchez, I'm on. I already said I'm off of Gilbert. Yamamoto, I'm probably not on. Don't know what to do with Brian Wu. He is a strange pitcher with his injury history, with his elbow and forearm inflammation, but pitched a full season last year. And then Chris Sale coming off the broken rib. So we have question marks across the board, but skills are through the roof in this group.
One of the reasons why I draft early is, well, number one, because I'm creating content and I want to just, I need to be able to explain things and I need a battle test ranking. So if I'm putting rankings out there, I need to be able to say, you know, justify it. And this is what I'm doing and why. So the same thing, like even now I'm doing a draft. If I catch myself taking someone way a couple, you know, 15 picks after where I have them in the rankings, I have to go back and update my rankings. I have to do that the right way. The other reason is to just get a little bit of like feel good on things that I may have gotten right that I may not have a chance to buy when the main event market happens. And one of those things would be like a Christopher Sanchez, somebody that, listen, I know a lot of people were on him, but dude, he was on every one of my teams in November, December, January, DCs. And this is when he was going 180 overall. And as the season went on and everyone started talking about him, and a lot of it was inevitable and obvious in many ways, he was really cruising up to, you know, 60th, 70th overall. And at that point, like, you need to like go out of your way to make a stand to get somebody. So getting early shares, it feels good. Of course, you want to get him on the main teams, but when prices go up, not much you can do about it. But he's a beast. I mean, like, he also threw the third most innings last year. He's relatively healthy. Top 10 in strikeouts last year. He's fifth in ERA. Even like the underlying, you know, the peripherals, like a Sierra around three, like everything just is great. and low walk rate. And you mentioned the ground ball rate. He's fantastic. So I do think he's a pretty easy four. Yamamoto, just, I don't know, something about it. I don't know. Maybe it's just maybe trying to sell low or sell high, I guess. But other than the 211 innings that he pitched last year between the playoffs and the regular season, other than that, like, I don't know. It's just a feeling, right? That I don't think there's anything else. Like everything else with the body of work is like, Yamamoto's a stud and he could prove me wrong. But he is just fantastic. And of course, they'll be working on a six man. I love Brian Wu. I love Logan Gilbert. Give me all the Seattle pitchers. The advantage that that ballpark gives is incredible. Over the last few years, just the ratios, everyone's ratios are just lower there in Seattle. And Chris Sale, other than the age, I don't really have an issue with it, but I don't catch myself clicking on him a lot just simply because he's 36 and doesn't have many seasons with 25 plus starts over the last 7 years.
Yeah, when he pitches, he's good, but you talk about some fluky injuries. The crazy part with Seattle, and we're not a prospect podcast by any means, but they have a kid coming up they just drafted that might be better than all of these Seattle pitchers, and Cade Anderson. Just watching him pitch recently is just like jaw-dropping good. So the rich get richer in Seattle.
Yeah, Cade Anderson is an absolutely fantastic DC pick. You're not getting him in round 48 when we were able to get him a couple months ago that way. Now you got a shot for him in the late 30s, but yeah, Cade Anderson's definitely on the map. Everything is also opportunity cost, right? So you need to know, if you're an NFBC, you want to know what your KDS slot is, who your target's there. You want to map it out several rounds, if not the whole draft, just to know how things might fall for you based on your pick. All these guys are not going to be available for you, so you got to pick your spots. But I think most people in NFBC, you want to different approaches, different strategies. We don't see the heavy, super heavy aces as much anymore. There's always a reliever that you want to grab too, sometimes early. Knowing where you're drafting from is the first place, and then knowing who the targets are and who may fall to you is another, right? Because if you got a 1-3 pick, forget those top pitchers, unless you're literally pushing Skubal into your top three, and it just takes you off the board. And now you're thinking, okay, now if I really want a pitcher, it means I'm going to have to push a Brian Wu or a Logan Gilbert or a Chris Sale at the 2-3 turn, and so on and so forth, and got to kind of do that exercise.
Yeah, and looking into this next tier, I really believe that Hunter Brown's going to jump up into that next tier in draft season. He's going to be firmly in the second round. Probably Cole Ragans will be at the wrap in 2-3 as well. I believe those two pitchers are going to be probably in that 1B tier. I see in your VDP you're actually a little lower on Brown, as am I. Mainly due to the BABIP and the left on base percentage. I think that 1.03 whip is kind of not really a true number of what a pitcher he is. He's really good. He's going to be a 200 strikeout pitcher, probably under 3 ERA, but he's probably closer to a 1.15-1.2 whip rather than that 1.03. And when you're drafting a pitcher this early, it's hard to take a non-whip solidifier, in my opinion.
Yeah, this group is it's an interesting one. I mean, this is the area where some people are going to shop first in. So you got like a Cole Ragans, we got the Hunters, Hunter Brown, Hunter Green. You got the veteran Jacob deGrom. You got another veteran in Max Fried, and you got Freddy Peralta. These are guys that'll go before the end of the fourth round of 15 teamers. It's a back end ace. It's a good guy to start with. And yeah, we'll see where these guys are going to fall in the next few weeks, right? Like, you've already seen Hunter Green kind of moving up there. He's been obviously a beast. Hunter Brown was going actually higher. So for people drafting in November, Hunter Brown was in that Chris Sanchez, Yamamoto range, and has been dipping a little bit. Me having him below his ADP, it's really, we're splitting hairs in this area, because it's not like I have a delta of like a full round or anything, but just a few picks past ADP, there definitely is a price where I would consider Hunter Brown. Hunter Green is just, is he another guy that you're worried about because of how hard he throws? I mean, this is a guy that's sitting over 99 miles per hour over his starts in 2025, but the numbers were ungodly, right? Like, this is a guy that pitched half his starts at Great American Ballpark. He had a 2.75 ERA and a sub 1 whip.
Yeah, and I think he's good enough to sustain his 240 BABIP. His stuff is that filthy. What I do like about Hunter Green is his last year's injury was not an arm. It was a growing injury. So he's not coming off an arm injury. In 24, he did miss 40 games with elbow soreness. And then 23, he had hip discomfort. So he had a strain growing twice in 25, missed 16 and then 71 games. So he was really good, but there is an injury concern there for that big body, hard throwing guy. I think you have to, at some point, put the injury concern aside when you're trying to get an ASO, don't you?
Of course. I mean,
when the skills show it. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you're talking, you know, ADP pick 46, you're talking around four. I think there's a reason he's around four, because the skills are showing probably around two. So at some point, you're going to take the risk. The crazy name on this list for me is Jacob DeGrom. The guy was going ADP, I believe, 40, what did we say, 47 last main event. He threw a full season, basically, of starts. We had a 0.92 whip, 30 starts, 172 innings, and he dropped 10 spots in ADP. Explain this.
I can't.
And you're not on him. I haven't drafted any of them. I don't understand why. Like, he's so good, other than he's 37 and injury Jacob DeGrom.
Yeah, I think there's also an element of, you know, like, it's a very sensitive part of the draft, and there's so many different other things to consider. There are the hitters. There's you know, the top catchers. Besides Rally, of course, we're talking about Contreras and Rice. There are the relievers, right? If you want one of the relievers, as those guys start to the top tier guys start to go, and don't want to make a mistake on the pick, and you can only pick so many guys, and so sometimes I think it's just a little bit of ageism creeps up, and it's funny because I didn't have that ageism for Jacob DeGrom last year. Yeah, you're right. You were here on the show, and we were talking about the end of last year, like Jacob DeGrom. The beginning of last season, or was it the end of the previous season? Where we said Jacob DeGrom's gonna be awesome, and we drafted him, but yeah, now we don't have that same feeling. How can we even explain it?
I think the feeling last year was that he had got the Tommy John and got the injury repaired, and we know the skills are that good. So he actually, what I think I was saying and you were saying, was he was almost a little safer last year because he was got that injury repaired. Now, second year off of surgery, what does that look like? So I always like to target guys that are 2 years off of Tommy John, mainly because they got it fixed. That basically restarts their time bomb in their elbow. So yeah, he's someone I got to relook at, because he could be a nice way to start your staff in round four.
He's one of the guys that I essentially like just almost nailed the projection to a T. So I had a $24 value on him. That's what he earned. He had a 2.97 ERA. I had a 2.96, 193 Ks versus 185, so on and so forth. The Grom is also, he was intentionally throwing at lower velocity, which of course is, like you were saying earlier, probably good for the arm. So it's a good point. Maybe it's something to reconsider. And we know, you know, it's a decent ballpark to pitch in. You know, the defense, you know, that is the one thing I'll mention, is I did a little bit of a deep dive on this defense, and just it isn't as good, you know, with the loss of Simeon and some of the guys they have there. Josh Smith is going to be playing second baseman. He's kind of a, you know, a mid-tier guy. Josh Young isn't a good defenseman. Corey Seager really ties everything together, because he is a good defender. So again, it all comes down to the theme for me always with the Rangers, even if it comes down to the pitching, is Corey Seager. If he's healthy and he's playing a good season or a full season, the Rangers will do better than expectations. If he doesn't, he won't. They won't.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the last name on this list, I don't think he belongs in this list, is Logan Webb. You know, I'm Giants love here, but I don't believe he's a two. Mainly, again, the whip. The guy puts the ball in play because he's a heavy sinker pitcher. Great pitcher, increased the strikeouts last year, led the league, I believe, in strikeouts last year in the National League at 224. Going to pitch 200 innings, going to get wins, but starting off your staff with a 1-2-3, 1-2-4 whip, he's going to have an incredible lucky BABIP season to get down to the 1-1, you know, below 1-1 where you really need out of your ace. So I'm not going to have any Logan Webb this year. I get why, because he was so good last year and he's a picture of health, but that whip is a hard no for me.
Freddie Peralta is another guy here, traded to the Mets, already kind of really fitting in with the crew over there. He's a little older now. I remember when he first came in with the Brewers, this young kid, 23, 24 years old. Now he's, you know, veteran, 27, I think, maybe year old. And 29. Okay. So then he was 24, 25 back then. That ERA, he's not going to get a sub-3 ERA again, probably, but it also wouldn't be surprising. I know there was a lot of like luck driven there with if you're looking at like say his XFIP in Sierra, which was closer to 3.7 than it was 2.7, super low BABIP at like 2.43. That's a good park. Hopefully solid defense. I don't know. We'll see how Bichette and all those guys hold up. But I don't know. I like Freddie Peralta on the Mets. I just like everything that the Mets are cooking. I think Peralta belongs in this range. He's got crazy strikeout upside as well.
Yeah, I was actually talking to our good friend Matty Modica this morning about the Mets, and I just told him I got good vibes from the Mets this year. I don't know why. So I like Peralta. I agree with your assessment 100%. He's going to be closer to a 3.5 ERA, probably closer to a 1.15 WHIP. But the guy, the strikeouts are consistent, the wins are consistent, the innings are consistent. He's a legitimate four-pitch pitcher now, where he came up and was a two-pitch pitcher. Guy knows how to pitch, and I have a good, take Vlad's term, gut feeling about the Mets this year. So I hope that's not trademark. You're not going to sue me, Vlad, but that's what I went with.
It's really funny that I started the gut thing so long ago. I got my 2007 Twitter account that like people like credit me for like gut and fab. Listen, I guess it helps to be early on things, but listen, we all got those guts, and it's statistic based a lot of times, right?
As long as we don't try to make fetch happen.
Yes, we do. Yes, we, the plural we, Ricky, sometimes tries to do make fetch happen. Speaking of, let's make Reagans happen. Cole Reagans, big power lefty for the Royals. I think he pitches a full season. Do you think the ballpark there, he is home run prone a little. I think that affects him, the fences moving in a little bit.
Yeah. Skills wise, he is up there with the swinging strike rate, the Scoobles. 15.8% is elite. The fences coming in scare me from a fly ball pitcher, but again, the coming off the strained shoulder last year. You can't be concerned about everyone, so you got to take a risk. So he's going to continue to move up, in my opinion, being an elite K rate. Guy knows how to pitch. Can he stay healthy? Because he'll be good when he does pitch.
Let's talk around tier three guys, pitchers going between 60 and 90, 95 or so ADP. Talking about high teens, low 20s in auction value, just as far as like just straight out raw value, not what their actual AAVs are on NFBC. And it's a nice list here. I mean, you got George Kirby from the Mariners, Jesus Luzardo of the Phillies, Dylan Cease, Kyle Bradish, maybe dropping a little bit with the talk about a probably hard cap around 150 or so, right? Remember Valdez, Nick Pivetta, Yuri Perez, Joe Ryan, who should be back into pitching, I hear, and then Nolan McClain, who had a really nice outing. That's going to have his stock soar a little bit. Let's talk about these guys.
I got a question for you out of this group. Where does Kyle Bradish and Nolan McClain's ADP settle in the main event?
If I knew how they were going to pitch in the spring, this is just assuming full health, I think Bradish will also be – Bradish can have an excellent spring, like a very good spring, and – literally because knowing the innings limit, he's going to still drop a little bit. Like I don't see him rising. It's just because of that cap, it just is what it is. Nolan McClain has high upside. This is a guy we've been talking about since December podcast. Like we can see cruising into the round four range, right? I mean, round three, you never know with this stuff, right? We've seen the craziest things happen before. The helium ends up a mind of its own, balloon of its own, and Nolan McLean can get there. You have a start like he had today as we record on this Thursday. You know, they can get there.
Yeah, he's got the Christopher Sanchez starter kit for his ground ball strikeout rate. So not to put any more gasoline on the fire, but he looks pretty good. This tier three, tier four is probably the most fun tier. You have a lot of upside arms. Maybe the Kyle Bradish helium has stopped where it is because of the innings limit. He just feels like a guy who's going to show up in spring and start striking people out. And he's going to end up where Schwellenbach was last year, even with the innings limit, because people like the shiny new toy. The guy I really like in this tier is Jesus Luzardo. He had a breakout season in 23, really broke out again in last year with the Phillies. Much better team context. ERA was a little higher, but I think got pretty unlucky with the BABIP at 324. He had the hard hit data down to 37%. The XFIP and Sierra were both excellent at 325 and 34. Throwing more strikes. Swing and strike rate at 13.5. CSW at 30.6. Just guy across the board pitched great. I think there's actually another skills leap that could happen here, and so I will be betting on it moving into this season.
Just to get a little taste of some of my writing chops as I pat myself on the back. Hey, maybe you think it sucks, but from my SB Tiers article about Luzardo, I wrote the Lizard is probably basically, if you're looking for smooth sailing from your SB2, the Lizard is probably not the reptile for you. The reason why. The reason why is like, dude, that the ride that he took us on, the roller coaster, I mean, he gave up 20 earned runs in two starts, and he still ended up with an ERA under four. One of the cool things from Baseball HQ that I always like to look at are like the dominant starts and the disaster starts. And I forgot the exact bucket of, you know, what constitutes a disaster, but, you know, just anything over four earned runs most likely, or five maybe, but he had a lot of those. But then the dominant starts were like insanely dominant, like just a whole bunch of double-digit strikeout games. And, it was really an up-and-down season. But FTN projections love him. I think he comes in as the SP10, and that's with just like 13 wins, because you're not going to find places really that are projecting players for more than 14 wins at all. But yeah, we love FTN model loves Luzardo. I love Luzardo. So does Jason Anthony. So hopefully that's good enough for you.
The Jesus Lizard.
The man.
He is the man. Two other guys I want to talk about on this list, both very poor team contexts, in Yuri Perez and Joe Ryan. Joe Ryan's already going to start slipping due to the injury concern. He is a great pitcher, but the Twins are an absolute dumpster fire. Scares me tremendously. But when you're looking for a whip asset, you're looking for K's, he's going to be really good if he does pitch. I'm going to need some more news on that. Might be advantage, or might be an opportunity to take advantage of the dip if he is healthy and it's just a precautionary. Yuri Perez is just fun. I had him last year. I had him stashed in DCs, and watching him pitch was just so much fun. But again, the Marlins are an improving team, but they're not good yet. But second year off of Tommy John surgery with those skills, count me in for the ride.
Yeah. You know, another guy I'll mention is just somebody I have a bias. I have a strong personal, like positive bias for, and it's George Kirby. And it's just the incredibly low walk rate. I think whip is really, it's the category that is just, you don't want to get hurt in it. It's a tough one to catch up on, and just guys serving up hits. And I mean, George Kirby will hurt your whip sometimes, by the way. It's not been the one and under as we expect from him, but the walk rate, one of these years, he's going to have that magical season, especially when you see a little bit of a strikeout bump, you have a home park and everything. I like it. And then when also you don't see them, I think we have to remember in spring, a lot of these guys are, they're testing out new things, new pitches, and It's just a different mentality a little bit. They're not out there to just dominate, especially the veterans. And so sometimes if the spring training stats, like, oh, he gave up a couple runs in the spring training stat, like, let's dig into that a little bit more. Let's see what they were doing, right? It's not just us making excuses for them. I know Roki Sasaki went out and had a bad outing, but he was testing out a new pitch. He said that that's what he was going to do. I see your face. I know you have a comment.
I was just looking at last year's ADP at Roki Sasaki at ADP 102. Year-end rake, NA.
Yeah, it didn't work out too well. And Kirby, he gave us some of that Luzardo-type damage. Nothing was like Tanner Houck-ish, but you know, there were still a couple of starts where, like, Mike, it's that I think it's like the James Franco gif where it's like where you're just a shocked face, like, Kirby at two? Like, how can you do that to me?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Kirby's numbers just without going under the hood last year, 4.21 ERA, 1.19 whip. It's like a no thank you, but the walk rate did tick up, but I think a lot of it due to the swing and strike rate continuing, or the outside the zone swing dropping. The contact rate continues to drop, which is great. The swing and strike rate goes up. The CSW goes up. So I agree with you. I think he's getting slept on a little bit, and I think he's trying to find that blend of not pitching too much in the zone while not walking guys. And I think he's due for a big year, Vlad. I like that call out.
Yeah, IADP is not too forgiving. It's end of the fourth, early fifth in 15 teamers, fifth round, sixth round in the NFBC OCs. Other guys, Franbro Valdez, Nick Pivetta, a lot of people seem to think just Pivetta's just going to give it back, but I think we've discussed him before, like the gains that he's made as far as his control and the reduction in walk rate over the last couple of years. I think in the ballpark, of course, I think those things stick. I know he had a Sierra and XFIP that was around a run higher than his actual ERA. Probably not a sub-3 ERA guy, but I don't think he's going to crush us there. I think he's kind of a safe pick.
Yeah, Nicky P, I think a lot of the disdain is just due to the rising draft costs. People loved him and, you know, the 120s at ADP. He's not going to be a bad pitcher just coming up here to ADP 90, so into the sixth round. It feels a little pricey for the skill set. And as much as we all like Nick Pivetta, I think he'll be solid. He's a cautionary yellow light for me as far as drafting.
Another thing sometimes I forget to think about, and maybe I do later in the season when I start seeing, or later in the preseason when I start seeing the schedule, is like the amount of games these teams play against their own division. And it's not as much as it was in previous years, but something like, if you're a Dodger pitcher, you're a Padres pitcher, and you're going to be facing the Diamondbacks, who just don't look good on paper. We've talked about it, the offense, especially if Corbin Carroll isn't 100%, or if they trade Ketel Marte, the Rockies, strikeout fest, especially, you know, at home or on the road. And then, I mean, listen, I could be wrong, but the Giants, I feel like they have a couple more, like, strikeout bats in their lineup now, right? Like, Eldridge, Bader, are these guys going to be striking out, or is this going to be a good play patient team under the new manager?
No, other than Jung-Hoo Lee and Luis Arraez, they have a lot of swing and miss. So yeah, they're going to have some pitchers rack up 12, 13 strikeouts against them, but they're going to do some damage too. So yeah, you're going to definitely get some Ks against the Giants, but they're going to hit you hard and if you don't have your A game.
And then Framber Valdez, before he had signed, had just been a little bit lower on him than his ADP for some time. He landed really in the perfect spot, perfect division there in the AL Central. Got the fatty contract. I don't know. I haven't noticed him. Like, he's jumping up a little bit, but people aren't going crazy about him. You look at his 5x5 stat lines over the last few years, generally consistent in the dollar value at the end, but the way he gets there is always different. Right, like sometimes the ERAs half a run higher, the WHIPs, you know, 0.3 high, lower, the strike. It's kind of a weird mix. How do you feel about Valdez?
He's kind of a Logan Webb light. I still don't have a category in my spreadsheet for knucklehead factor. I have a really hard time with how he ended this last year, leaving Houston. I thought his ADP would go up once he signed in Detroit, because, like you said, that's a perfect spot. His first half looked like the previous two seasons where he was just dominant. I gave it a lot of it back in the second half. Some of it due to BABIP luck, but a lot of skills regression in the second half. So I don't know if that was get me out of here or what. I'm having a hard time judging him, but I think he's a really good number two if you have a high strikeout early capital pitcher that you drafted that you can pair with Framber.
By the way, the thing that I referred to in the article about I won't get into here, it was a weird thing. It was about a year and a half ago, and it fizzled a little bit. And listen, it's not my bone to pick or not my drama, but it was just like a really weird thing about like that apparently Valdez is just known for I think he's married, but he loves sliding in DMs and having out late nights and doesn't give an F.
Well, some guys will move him up on their draft sheet then.
That's right. In Detroit, man, there's a lot going on there. But anyways, the rotation is amazing. It looks really good. I mean, they lost Reese Olson and still it's pretty loaded. Added Justin Verlander. I think they'll have a few good starts. How many starts do you think Verlander makes this year?
I think Verlander's the projections are pretty accurate. What do they have him for, 26?
It's a lot.
I think he's going to pitch. I mean, I watched him last year with the Giants, and he was really good the second half. Projections have him 26. I think they're going to need him in that rotation. He's going to have a couple breaks, but second half, Verlander was actually pretty usable as a fantasy pitcher. So great ballpark for him, obviously comfortable home. I would say probably take the under on 26, but he's not – I think he's going to be in the mid to low 20s.
Let's run through these tier four, tier five guys. I'm going to bucket them all together. Their ADPs, we'll just put it in a 50 cluster. So it's like 100 to 150 on the ADP. I'll rattle out some names and tell me why this isn't like the greatest tier to go shopping in ever. It's Spencer Strider, Chase Burns, Emmett Sheehan, veterans Kevin Gausman and Sonny Gray, more Dodgers, Tyler Glasnow and Blake Snell. Yeah, Nick Lodolo coming off the big year. Zach Wheeler looking ahead of schedule. Michael King and Ryan Pepio. Drew Rasmussen. Gavin Williams, last year's walk rate leader, but 3 ERA. Nathan Eovaldi with a microscopic ERA last season. Young kids, Treya Savage with a bit of a cap on the innings. Bubba Chandler, Cam Schlittler, Jacob Mizrowski. And then, of course, Woodruff. And Trevor Rogers has moved up in my tier. I've got him around ahead of his ADP. He continues to roll. Why is this not just like the place to shop?
Oh, it's a lot of fun. I like a lot of pitchers in here. I was a little surprised on Emmett Sheehan's ADP when we started drafting, being solidly in round 8-9. Love the skills, but there is an innings cap there. You talk about Treya Savage. He pitched over 120 innings last year, including the playoffs. So I don't believe there's as big of a cap on him as everyone's talking about, because I've read that quite a bit. I think you're looking at 140 to 150, where Sheehan only pitched, I think 100 combined last year. Again, I love the skill set in Sheehan, but that scares me in a 15-team league with the replacement value. I like him a lot more in a 12. I think Chase Burns is going to end up one of those guys that just starts rocketing up as he does what he did today and just missed a ton of bats and started striking guys out. Another guy I really like, but again, you have some issues with possible health issues. So it depends how you're building your team. Gausman and Sonny Gray, I think Sonny Gray is getting slept on with his skills. Boston is a concern coming from St. Louis, but better team context on the playoff run. I think he's going to be value where he's going. And I think the biggest wild card here is Zach Wheeler. Guy was in the running for a Cy Young possibly last year. He was pitching so well and then had the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. I believe it's thoracic outlet, right, Vlad?
Yeah, they're the two of them. It's the bit lesser of the one that you can come back from typically.
Yeah, he's already throwing off a mound. I think his ADP is going to continue to rise, and you can't really get aces. Zach Wheeler's status at pick 128. So it'll be interesting to see where he starts going as we get more data, more information coming out. Yeah, there's just so many guys, Lodolo, Pepio, King. I like them all. I try not to like too many Dodgers guys. you know me. But again, and then Spencer Strider, second year off of surgery, is his fastball back? I think that will tell us everything to know. Does he throw 98 or 96?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a wonderful place to shop. I mean, everything I see about Chase Burns is just off the charts. Even, when first seeing him come up, you're like, oh, this guy's got to have like a 11% walk rate. No, he's got decent control too. And something about it came out a week ago, oh, Chase Burns is in the competition for the five spot. I'm like, no. Whoever's else is going for the five spot is in competition with Chase Burns, because Chase Burns is going to be in that rotation. Is he going to go pitch deep inning? No, probably not. But this is an area where the guys you name, Trey Savage, Chase Burns, Tyler Glasnow, Emmett Sheehan, we don't know, or Blake Snell even, you don't know how many innings they're going to pitch. You're not expecting 160 plus, but you're expecting the ratios, the strikeouts, everything to be stellar. And then you figure you can sort of just manage along with it. Whereas, somebody like, Sonny Gray, Kevin Gausman, you're older veterans, probably, you're probably going to get more chances of 180 innings, but you're not going to have that insane dominance like you're going to have. Like there are going to be some starts from Emmett Sheehan that are just like, oh my God, this guy's insane. And it's worth it if you build the pitching staff right. A lot of times that's what it comes down to. But a swing strike rate for Emmett Sheehan over the course of his career of like 17%-ish, and it was 15.5 last year in his innings, like, dude's a beast. But you're right, 130, 140 innings for these Dodger guys is like max.
Beating the Dodgers pitching staff in innings pitched at 130 innings. and then the other guy on here, that the ultimate boom bust out of any of them, Jacob Mizorowski, just lit the world on fire when he came up. Unhittable, but then couldn't throw strikes, end up getting pulled out of the rotation moving into the playoffs. He's fascinating where he's going to go, because the upside, the K rate is just tremendous, but his hold on the rotation, his hold on being a major leaguer seems tenuous unless he really figures out how to throw strikes.
One thing I'll mention is, Strider, somebody I don't want to cross out anybody, right? Like these guys are always constantly moving, and I'm not going to overreact based on the start, but I want to read into things more than just a headline. I think headlines are so tricky, and especially these days we're busy, right? Like our attention spans and our time even, right? We're busy, work, family, whatever. Sometimes all you have time is just to look at the top line of something. And a lot of those top lines are misleading, especially on social media, where they're just trying to draw you in to click in on the article. Like, I want to know details of these things. Like, I'm not going to move Bubba Chandler 30 spots down ADP because he had a couple of walks, right? Like, I don't know, maybe he had a rough breakfast, or from what I read, he was just like really, couldn't sleep that entire night, the night before, right? So careful with the headlines, read a little bit more of the details. If there's like a legit, oh, this guy's lost a couple of velocities, complaining about, a little tinge in his elbow. Those are the things we worry about. But most of the times these guys are just getting the kinks out, trust a little bit in the talent and read beyond the headlines.
Yeah. I mean, this is where the deep research really wins leagues, because, you don't want to overreact, but you have to react in order to win. You can't just stay status quo on everything.
By the way, Ryan Pepio, super weird last year, but his road ERA was about 4.5. But at hitter-friendly Steinbrenner Field, the Mariner League Park, it was 3.41. But people seem to love Pepio this year. He's going over a lot of guys. And I think there's some projection system. I think FTNs doesn't love him for the ratios either. And I think it was maybe like the bat hates him or one of those. I forget. But like, they're not pretty, but it's still not affecting his allure. Like, people love Ryan Pepio, and he's going over, I'm seeing him going over guys like, Nick Lodolo or like Michael King and Gavin Williams, who I think are also pretty solid guys. I feel like these guys are all kind of in the same range.
Yeah. You just like Pepio because he was a Dodger.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Honestly,
sure.
I didn't, I also didn't say I love him. I say, like, for example, like if it's him or Michael King, I think I prefer Michael King.
Yeah, I think Pepio's got a nice floor that you're kind of looking for in this SP3, SP4 range, where going back to the trop, getting out of that ballpark, even though their home road splits were kind of backwards, he doesn't walk many guys. So he just, or at least he came up not walking many guys. Ball percentage is kind of right in the middle. I think there's a skills jump there. I just don't know what we're expecting as a community moving into, you know, 26 going back to the trop. So seems like a safe pick, but how safe, you know, at a 4 ERA can you get? Because his whip at 116, 115 the last year had a really low BABIP, but 258 and 262. So interesting, interesting.
Yeah. Gavin Williams, we talked about him on the Guardians. He led the major leagues in walks last year. He had a rate of nearly 12%. Strikeout rate through the roof, nearly 25%. Massive difference with his 306 ERA and a 435 Sierra, but listen, people still love him. Should hopefully improve with the walk rate. He's a really solid arm. And then Drew Rasmussen, I will just mention, kind of on the sly, I really like Drew Rasmussen. I think he's just an absolute horse. Got him on a lot of my teams. I think the manager's talking about, you know, 160 innings. Listen, people want to discount him for the cap. I'll take 160 innings from Drew Rasmussen over, I think, most pitchers outside of the, you know, except for the top 10.
It does feel like he's getting slept on. Just the non-sexy, you know, just guy gets it done. I agree with you. I think we were in a draft together and I picked him. You text me immediately, nice pick.
Yeah. Yeah, I got him on both my CLQs so far, so like him very much. We talked about a lot of these young guys. Let's wrap things up here on today's episode with the round six tier guys going 150 to 200 ADP. I'll throw out the names, and then you tell me what you think. The NL guys first: Robbie Ray, Sandy Alcantara, Shota Imanaga, Edward Cabrera, the teammates, and Cade Horton, three teammates there, three Cubs going in the 150 to 200 range. On the AL side, you got Luis Castillo, Tatsuya Imai, who just had his first start, Mackenzie Gore, Tanner Bibee, Ranger Suarez, now of the Red Sox, and Connor Griffin Lore, and Shane Boz and Carlos Rodon. Who do you like? Who don't you like?
Actually, before you throw that to me, I want to talk to you about Cade Horton and your disdain for Cade Horton. Why you have him 17 picks below ADP in your VDP. I'm a fan of Cade Horton. I think if his K rate pick ticks up at all, which it did in the minors, that you're looking at a real value pick here. But his K rate was pretty low last year. So, you know, what do we think he is? You know, he only had a 7.4 K per nine last year. But ERA was really low, just really understands how to pitch. So, why are you kind of against him? Was it kind of the underlying in the first half, the Pip and Sierra kind of outpitched everything?
The one thing I'll say that's a little deceiving sometimes when I'm just posting the deltas of the pitcher is it's based on the entire player pool. So if I have like a pocket of you know, catchers or outfield or someone that I'm bumping up, then one of those guys are being pulled down. So if it's usually within an ADP, it's basically saying like, I'm all right with these guys, but that I just think they're just like maybe like a little bit step below. And it's basically like how I'm drafting. For the most part, I'm, you know, like I'm usually taking a Tanner Bibee or a Shota over Cade Horton. And then on the next pick, I would probably consider a Cade Horton. So it's not a full against. I actually think he's a stud. But we'll mention that if you're looking at the deltas, they could be deceiving because it's looking at the entire player pool and other positions that make it bumped up.
Got it. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. To answer your question, sorry to throw a question at a question. Easy name on this list, Mackenzie Gore. I also like Robbie Ray a bit too. But going to Mackenzie Gore, he did this last 2 years, it seemed like, but last year, first half, 17 starts, 99 innings, 129 strikeouts, 309 ERA, 1-2 whip, 24.4 K minus walk, just an XFIP and Sierra both 3.09. And then the second half fell off a cliff again. Ended up the season at a 417 and a 135. his lowest whip ever at a 1.35. So people worry about him as a whip destroyer. Everyone that listens to us knows how cautious I am with my whip. I think going to Texas, there's a huge opportunity to have a huge breakout. I know I said huge twice, but I believe it's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is huge too. I think he's one of those guys where we saw, like we saw Brian Wu last year, right? Like just catapult up 150, 200 spots of value and be a top, you know, the SP5 or whatever. If Mackenzie Gore is a top 10 SP, I wouldn't be surprised. If his whip is not lower than last year's 1.35, I would be very surprised. It's just the essence of just moving over there. Like now you're around guys like DeGrom and Eovaldi and that pitching staff, and it's in the ballpark division. Just a big difference there. I think this is, you know, Mackenzie Gore was a massive prospect with the Padres, and then he was hurt and sucked in the minors, and people were like, off Mackenzie Gore. So he was a great post-hype guy. And dude, I love him. I think he's a stud. Got to be careful. It always comes down to that whip factor that we talk about. So if you do have guys that are more likely to get you like a 1.2 plus, and you don't have those huge anchors like a Skubal or Skeens or whomever, then you do have to kind of be mindful of it because it could get into the 1.3s. It's definitely possible. I think what in his first, you know, couple innings or whatever that he threw, again, he's walking guys. It's like, you know, it's part of what he does, but you know, it's more the whip, right? The walk rate's usually under 10%. So he's maintained that. There could be even more of a drop there, but I like him overall. I feel like I should be clicking more on the Mackenzie Gore button.
Yeah. Another guy, Robbie Ray, again, second year coming off of Tommy John. Skills are not the Cy Young Robbie Ray, so I think that's why he's down here. But I think we're going to get value out of that pick on that Giants team. He's going to take the ball every fifth day, going to get a lot of strikeouts. So I think it's a pretty easy value pick. Also really like Edward Cabrera down here. He did a pitch mix change in the second half, and it really took hold. Again, can he throw strikes? But something about the Cubs, they have elite up the middle defense with Swanson, Horner, and PCA. So,
yeah.
You know, Edward Cabrera's whip in the second half was 1-1. Last year was whip for the year was 1-2-3, and that was the lowest by a significant amount. So I think you're seeing a significant skills growth from a guy. Cubs targeted him in a trade, gave up their top prospect. I think there's a big season coming from him.
And we talked about the ballpark there, Wrigley Field. I mean, at least the last couple of seasons, like just a slightly lower, you know, kind of becoming a little bit more of a pitcher's park, more games, winds blowing in than out. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Cubs pitchers are a great investment in this range. I think Shoti Minaga is a little bit underrated too. He's a great whip guy as well. So big fan of his. Good with Cabrera. Not so big on Luis Castillo, whose fastball velocity has declined four straight years. Maybe Seattle home park will save him a little bit. So I'm all right with him. I'm interested in the guy in Houston, the new guy, Tatsuya Imai. Definitely in on him. And then I'll always be a Shane Boss apologist. I don't care that he's going to, to Baltimore in that hitter friendly park. I think he's a stud. I think Shane Boss is going to have a nice season.
I think there's an upside pick there too. It's pretty good with Shota having a down year at a 0.99 whip, huh?
Not too bad. Last question for you, Carlos Rodon, because he is looking good. He's looking healthy. He's been one of the more dominant starting pitchers over the last couple of years, and you're getting him at like a 180. And so say you don't have a Wheeler already. You already have somewhat of a safe team. Are you considering Rodon? I feel like we've been down this path before, and one time it turned out good, one time it turned out bad. We're in the preseason, he wasn't ready, but he seems to be progressing on the positive side. Both him and Cole do, but Rodon is expected back before Garrett Cole.
Yeah, he is not on my draft board right now that I've taken. I usually have four or five starting pitchers before pick 200 ADP where he's going, and just don't like putting that injury guy right there. I'll take a Zach Wheeler for a stash, but not really trying to take guys that are injured start the year unless the payoff is enormous and not going to be a long wait. I don't know. I need to find out more information when Rodon's projected to be back. What worries me is these guys ramp up too quickly, trying to get back to help their team, don't have a normal spring training, and then get injured. Usually not the same injury, but a hamstring or, you know, groin or something. So I don't know. There's a lot of strikeouts here and a lot of wins if you get it right. So it could be a payoff, but not so far for me.
Yeah, pick your shots on these guys. Make sure you're fully informed, especially if you're going to be taking a zero to start the season or, you know, a stash can only really take so many of those. All right, that'll do it. We'll catch up with starting pitchers part two at some point very shortly. And then also breaking news. We're going to have some live stream NFBC RotoWire online championship draft. So a lot of your favorite FTN analysts and me, not one of your favorite, we will be doing live drafts and we will stream them on YouTube, on Twitter, on X, wherever streams occur in your local area or internet. And Jason Anthony is one of the people that we're doing. Probably Jason will be the first one. So get ready. We're going to do a live stream with Jason Anthony.
Beat booms. Bring it on.
Bring it on. We'll make sure that's posted everywhere so you can sign up for it. That'll do it. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Hope no one else gets hurt. Spring training. For Connor Griffin, the FTN team, Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.